Good morning, everybody, and happy Monday to you. It's Monday, September 21st, 2020. My name is Larry Jacobs, and thanks so much for being with us today here on Education Talk Radio, of course, now a part of our ace-ed.org organization, our organization for equity. All right, we have our American Consortium for Equity in Education. You can learn all about it at ace-ed.org. We are linked over there now. Okay, so please go over there, just look at the icon for Education Talk Radio Podcast. You'll be able to click right through and see our schedule for the week, etc. Go over to the Education Talk Radio website from there. But again, ace-ed.org, it's all about equity, and you're cordially invited to join our consortium for educators. Obviously, it is free for pre-K-12 folks. So please, actually, university folks, too. What am I talking about? So please, it's an industry-supported organization. So please go over to ace-ed.org. And by the way, our new issue of Equity and Access magazine, okay, is over there. It's our online journal. This issue is wonderful. I hope you'll enjoy it when you go over there. Again, no charge. Everything we do over there is free. We want your voice heard. You'll be impressed with the magazine, impressed with the website, all the information that's over there, including special sections from Johns Hopkins and also a special section from ACT, to which my guest today is somewhat linked. We'll talk about Brian in just a couple of minutes, but please go over to ace-ed.org and check it all out. By the way, we tweet at EduTalkRadio for the podcasts, and we link at LinkedIn over at Larry Jacobs, and Facebook is either Larry Jacobs or Education Talk Radio. If you want to friend us, follow us, or link with us, etc., etc. My guest is a gentleman named Brian Contreras, and Brian's a first-generation Mexican-American. I'm going to say that proudly. He was raised in Houston, all right? And then by luck and brains and everything else, he wound up getting a scholarship to one of the great schools in America, the town where my kids grew up, over in Exeter, New Hampshire, at Phillips Exeter Academy. And he took what he learned, we'll talk about where he went after Phillips Exeter, which is high school learning, okay, and went back to Houston. And then he started the KIPP program, K-I-P-P, Knowledge is Power, through college program over at the KIPP Houston Public Schools, all right, serving low-income communities. And now he is working for My Options. We'll tell you all about it. Brian, tell you all about that. MyOptions.org. He started there in the fall of 2017, and now he's scaling his practices to schools across the nation. So without further ado, my new best friend in the whole world, a graduate of Phillips Exeter, Brian Contreras. Good morning, Brian. It's Larry.
Larry, good morning. Good to hear your voice and great to be on the show. Thanks for hosting and having me.
My God, it's a pleasure to have you here, my friend. So you went from the hard streets of Houston to the even harder streets of Exeter, New Hampshire. Am I correct?
That is correct. Right there at the corner of Front and Main Street. You know the drill.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It's great to have you here. By the way, I do want to say this because this is fun to say. Your daughter's starting Phillips Exeter, right? Is she a PEA?
She is.
Yeah, that's cool.
She actually started online classes 2 weeks back, and we'll be flying up there to get her settled in. She's an incoming freshman, which they call preps, as you know.
Yeah,
an incoming prep, and she'll be there for a couple of months, and then back home for the holidays, and then we'll see what spring holds for these kiddos.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens with everybody with spring. And by the way, if people haven't been to Exeter or Andover, either one of those two schools, the campuses look like college campuses. They're absolutely beautiful, beautifully well endowed. Go back into the 1600s, and it's such a lovely town, Exeter. Brian is even better than when you were there. It's going wacky. My wife is there today. We don't live there anymore, but my wife is there today for her book club meeting tonight. There you go.
Awesome.
There you
Very
go.
Good.
Remember,
Very good.
Remember the bandstand right in the center of town, the bandstand?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
They named their club the Bandstand Book Club, so there you go. Right.
That's great.
And I have another question to ask you. I don't know. They call KIPP, stands for Knowledge is Power. Shouldn't that be NIP? See if you get that joke.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Yeah, see, knowledge with a name. Oh, no, never mind. See, I'm totally kidding.
Yep.
Yeah, if you named that, it wouldn't be very good. Tell us a little bit about your life, okay, without getting into the lurid details. But just tell us, you know, you're taking your life and making the things that happen to you available to children who are raised in harder circumstances than perhaps some others. So your life is important here, okay? And what you've accomplished is important here. So just talk about that. Give everybody an idea of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think you mentioned at the top of the podcast, Houston's a very diverse city, and my grandparents moved to Houston back in the late 50s, early 60s. They were Mexican-American migrant workers that had resettled from the Rio Grande Valley in Texas up to Houston and raised their family, and they had 9 children. My dad was the second oldest in the family.
Wow.
Saw some difficult circumstances early in his life. He was, stricken with heroin addiction, so was my mother. He spent most of his time in penitentiaries, both state and federal, and my grandparents raised me and my brother. And along the way, as any, family that's in generational poverty, you know what comes along with all of that, especially being Mexican-American back in those days. It was very difficult times for all of us. But my grandparents always rang the bell of education first, and they pushed one of their sons through MIT, one through Cornell, a daughter through the University of Houston back in the 70s, who started a chain of pharmacies. And so we've always seen excellence and success through education. So although we were very, 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 we were dirt poor, we always knew that there was hope, and that hope came by way of education, and that would allow us to all dictate our own pace. So that's really what drove me to take the opportunity when it became available to me in middle school to even pursue a boarding school, when someone, put opportunity in front of me. I feel like I had the enough, I guess, I use the word lightly, but I had enough sense to say, this is an opportunity. I can't, I need to take advantage of this. And so with that, I mean, there's so much more to that, Larry, but that's the backdrop
That's a movie. What you just said is a movie. I'm waiting for it to come out on HBO with your life story. I mean, it's incredible. Are your grandmom and grandpa still with us?
No, they've passed. They've passed. They've passed on, and it's the family has seen some other difficult times. But that's my grandmother. She passed in a car accident, tragically. Shorter life than we had hoped. And so we've seen some tough things. And again, we stay together. We use our experiences and our education to keep our family tethered together. And you press on. You press on.
Yeah, you do. But, boy, I'll tell you, that's quite a story. I hope she can hear me. Congratulations to Grandmom and Grandpa for a job well done. I mean, that's just unbelievable. That's just unbelievable. And, it's the true and what that's what the immigrant experience, if I may, is supposed to be. Okay, and I don't wish ill on anybody. I wish everybody could step into middle class right off the bat, but we can't do that in most cases. But the point is,
a lot of hard work.
What they accomplished and instilled in their grandchildren, I'll say it that way, is absolutely incredible. That's just great. So where did you go after Phillips Exeter, which again is a high school?
So interesting. Yeah, interestingly enough, this is a question I often get, Larry, and so there's going to be a little bit of a pause when I tell you. You're like, head scratcher. When I completed my studies at Exeter, my diploma, I actually returned back to Houston, and I studied at the University of Houston, which – most folks would ask the question, wow, okay, Exeter to U of H, help me understand that, because most of those students are coming, out of Exeter. They're going, all the Ivy Leagues and
exactly.
the posh.
But
the
I understand
school.
That. I understand that.
But my connection there is this, and this is where, it gets into a little bit of what I think we might talk about here on the show. When I went to Exeter, Exeter was not prepared to support me in my experience. And what I mean by that is, I felt very much like an imposter back in the mid to late 80s at Exeter. Didn't know how to ask for help. Didn't know how to reach out when I needed it. And the support systems, while they tried their darndest to help me, I just couldn't connect for whatever the reason. And I think I know now, but then I was just like, what is going on? This is hard. This is hard academically, but this is also hard socially, culturally.
That's right.
And I didn't think that even the adults on campus knew who I was. So I actually withdrew in 10th grade at Exeter, came back home, studied at one of the great high schools in Houston, and then kind of stepped back and said, what am I doing? I've just taken this opportunity off the table. And I actually reapplied to Exeter a second time, went through the process twice, and I was admitted to return as a senior to finish my diploma. And so when I went back as a 12th grader, believe it or not, I made straight A's and B's.
I
believe
that 100%. What year are we talking about for you as a 12th grader when you graduate, basically?
As a 12th grader, I graduated. So I graduated in 91.
Cool.
So 91 would have been the academic
year. We lived there.
We lived there.
I could have come to your graduation, for goodness sakes. We lived there.
Yeah.
Thanks for the invite,
But I say
Brian.
All that because yeah. – Yeah, I'm sorry, Larry. The invitation's in the mail, man. Come on.
Thanks, pal. You know, that's – the mail is so slow in New England. I'll wait. Don't expect a check.
But,
that's
you know,
in the mail, too. A congratulatory check is in the mail, too. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
There's so many skills and behaviors and things that students need to learn as young adults. And, you know, I just had not picked those up yet.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, honestly,
what you're saying makes
sense. it was a challenge. So I needed to come back to Houston after high school because I was literally, I wouldn't use the word burnt out, but I had been pushed, right? I had been pushed and stretched. And there's also another part of the story is, you know, that year when I graduated was the year my dad finally was released from state penitentiary for not having seen him for a long period of time. It was a long stretch that he had done. And he was released the month I graduated from Exeter. In fact, they let him get out early to go to my high school graduation because the warden knew what type of school this was. And so, you know, he came up there. I saw him.
Well,
in the process, I knew he was supposed to be home. I just needed to be close to family, and I wanted to be close to him. So, you know, there's a whole other story behind that, but that's the idea. Like, I returned to Houston after Exeter, studied at the University of Houston, and I began to sort of to think about, okay, what does life really, really hold for me, and where do I contribute? And I kind of started finding my way to education. So that's kind of the beginning of the story.
Did you graduate as an education major? From the University of Houston?
Did not. No, that's another – yeah, I did not. I graduated with actually a hotel and restaurant management degree, thinking I was going to run chains of hotels across the world.
You ran school lunchrooms, so that's okay. It's the same basic idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And we could use that type of hospitality mentality in the school environment. So I understand
exactly.
That. Good day to you, sir.
But I was
student.
But underneath that, my undergrad, I was a minor. I was minoring in Mexican American studies, which had a huge literature history to it, and it also allowed me to tutor students in the local middle schools and high schools with their writing. And so I began to tutor students in middle school, high school in the Houston area, and the rest is kind of history. I mean, after that, I went and studied. I did my master's degree in education here in the Houston area as well, and finished that and with a secondary education concentration, really with the focus on student development. In the you know, studying, you know, Piaget and Bloom's taxonomy and all that. And so I just really got interested in, okay, how do we really start to shape students' minds, mindsets, and help them to stretch themselves and to believe in themselves, right? That whole self-efficacy component. So I just latched on. And, again, that's where I really kind of dug in.
And, you know, the whole thing, and I'll say this, and we're going to talk about this, obviously, but, you know, the whole thing, and this is why it's so important these days, we've learned, what held you back at the beginning was the lack of social-emotional learning, okay, and that need for resiliency and self-confidence, and boy, you learned that the hard way. You went to the school of hard knocks for that. Okay, and you suddenly realize the opportunity was available to you and how you could translate your experiences translated beautifully, okay, into what you're trying to accomplish for kids. And you've succeeded in that, Brian. I mean, it's really quite a complicated road to get to the Emerald City, and you're really doing that, okay? And I got to tell you, so how'd you get involved with KIPP, the Knowledge is Power program? Okay,
and
in Houston. Yep. Yeah, and by the way, I do want to – we're going to talk about my options. I do want to talk about that, but I'm just trying to get this whole picture.
I got you. Yeah, no, yeah. So Kip, again, as I finished up my master's degree, I actually transitioned over to the admissions office. So I started off in college admissions back in the late 90s at Houston Baptist, at Houston Baptist University. So in HBU – had a they were hosting on the back side of their campus. They had this little, they had like six or seven modular buildings, which would look like trailers, right? And I kept seeing these students who kind of like looked, walked, and talked like me coming in and out of these modulars every single day. And I lived in an apartment right across the street. And I noticed it was called Knowledge is Power Program. And this was back in, 99, 2000.
Yep.
Right about the time when the KIPP program got picked up by, I think Oprah Winfrey hosted the show, 60 Minutes, hosted them on their show. And then they begin to blossom here locally with their schools, their charter schools. And so I started to do some outreach with them, helping their students think about essay writing for boarding schools and prep schools. And so where KIPP began in Houston, they started to send their students to the private schools locally, the boarding schools across the country. And
wonderful.
I walked in one day and I said, "Hey, I think I can help your students." And they were just like, "Okay, who are you and what do you bring to the table?" And
I bring Phillips Exeter.
They
were
like, they were just
"Wow, yeah."
So they, we started a relationship. I helped them for a couple of years with helping their eighth graders go through that process, and then they opened their first high school in the fall of the summer of 2006. KIPP High School. They started in 2004 actually. And I went to the school leader and I said, "Listen, I know you're about to send your first set of students off to college. I think there were about 60 in that first class. I know a little bit about admissions and I know a little bit about going through this process. Let me help you build the program." And she asked me, she goes, "Well, tell me what you would do." And I just kind of laid it out on four napkins. I'll never forget it. And I said 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. And I just kind of bullet pointed it out. And then she looked at me and she's like, again, same question. She's like, "Who are you? Where do you come?" So
I'm Brian
Contreras. To pull another a Wizard of Oz, because you already mentioned the Emerald City, I pulled back the curtain of college admissions counseling. I said, "Here's how you got to get these kids to these great schools." And in that first class, Larry, we had kiddos go to Vanderbilt, Claremont McKenna, obviously all the public flagships here in Texas, UT Austin, A&M.
Yeah.
And these are students that would have probably, if they had been at their, their local neighborhood high schools, who knows what those opportunities might have looked
exactly
like for
them. That's exactly right.
We sent them everywhere. We sent them everywhere, and they all persisted and completed. I'll say in that first group, we probably had about a 70% completion rate in 6 years or less with those 60 kids.
That's
so,
college completion rate, by the way.
Correct.
College completion rate. Congratulations. Quite the story. So now, okay, I want to get into this because my options, where you are now, and it's my, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's myoptions.org, right? If people want to go there.
That's correct.
myoptions.org. And basically, if I've got this straight, it's free college and career planning. Okay, help us, especially for kids who are first-generation, lower-income kids. You'll explain all this as you go. And, quote, what you wanted to call it is a blended approach to – and emphasis on the word blended – a blended approach to counseling, okay? So tell everybody what you're doing now at My Options, okay, and what they should be thinking about it when they hear those words.
Absolutely. So we're a nonprofit that provides free, no-cost resources to students, families, and educators across the country. It's a free college and career planning program. We're super excited and thrilled. This timing for today's conversation couldn't be more, timely. We are actually launching this week our brand-new educator platform. Again, no-cost to secondary and to administrators across the country. Program allows students to we have our student platform My Options, we have our educator platform My Options Encourage, and then we also work with our colleges and university colleagues as well. And so we have a third component to this ecosystem, if you will, of bringing and staying student focused, bringing all three legs of the stool together to put the student in the best position to be what I like to say, educated decision makers of their post-secondary decisions, right?
Oh, I love that.
The platform for students allows them to do everything you would imagine. Search colleges, explore colleges. We give them a list of matched schools based on academic profile and some of their high-level interests and values. We have a checklist that walks them through the process semester over semester, year by year, starting in eighth grade. And these are those key milestones. And then we also have articles and microblogs that we've written for students to read or parents to read. Anyone can actually read them and probably take away some learnings. Do some other things on that platform, like, give an update to their school counselor, their mentor, on where they are in the FAFSA completion, like the free application for student aid. Have they started it? Are they in a verification mode? And so those are all ways that we think that students providing updates back to their mentor, their school counselor, their teacher, their older sibling, their parent or guardian, when all those other folks join on the My Options Encourage platform on the other side of this work, that's where we see, okay, here's where the power is. You allow the kid to drive this process, provide the updates, but now the other person on the other end is able to see exactly where they are. So there's some real-time information sharing. So that way you can provide the support that student needs at that particular time. So high level, it's you know, giving educators and mentors the ability to stay connected with students, to then coordinate
that's cool.
and counsel with them.
Yeah, that's
great. And,
right.
you know, for the students, same thing. Free
right.
information
really,
that's best in class, I would say.
And you said before about bringing the three legs of the stool together, and I want to work this back, okay? My options, and I'm reading off the website here, and I just want to be sure I've got this so everybody understands it. And I mentioned ACT, my good friends, okay? We have that special section on our website over at ace-ed.org devoted to the good work they do in terms of equity. That's what this is all about. So let me just read this. My options is part of the larger ACT family, okay? See, ACT goes beyond testing, I would say, really tries to get kids involved in all this and make it out. The ACT family, which is also part of the National Research Center for National Research Center for College and University Admissions, which is also part of ACT, correct?
Correct. That is absolutely
okay.
correct.
A lot of loops in there. A lot of loops in there. I wanted to make sure everybody does it. So this is pretty cool. This is 100% free. This is free.
100% free. Yeah, for students, families, and anybody in secondary education, absolutely. And this is where I think that, you know, Larry, when we talk about access and equity, one of the things that I like to say is, yes, I've served low-income, underrepresented minorities, but I also just serve disconnected youth. I would just say it that way. And that includes any student of any color across this country. When, you know, when poor kids are in a rural setting, urban setting, anywhere, I don't care what their color is, they're disconnected from information, from resources,
that's right.
from mentors, and people who are trained and skilled to do this level at the level at which high socioeconomic status students or families, the resources that they receive. So what we're doing here is really leveling the playing field and saying, listen, if you want to have, you know, some best-in-class college counseling, we're going to give you the resources and tools and the platform, and then we're going to coach you on how to go find that right mentor to help you get through this process. Because guess what? In this experience, team's going to beat individual all the time with college counseling.
Right. It's unbelievable. And, you know, we use the word underserved and first generation and all that. I like the way you're kind of phrasing it, to the under-resourced student. And that could be a student, just a kid in a very rural high school, all right, where they just don't have the resources, all right? And they just don't. Okay, myoptions.org, and everybody can go over there. One question, I have a question to ask you on the website. I can't find it, so I want you to tell me where it is if you know. My Options, you said there's a part for educators. Okay, My Options Encourage, right? Is that up on the website yet?
Yes, yeah, so at the top of your navigation bar, you should see the ability to find, there's a page for educators, education partners. I believe it's a third tab on the top of the nav bar. You could go across who we serve, and if you drop that down, you'll see education partners.
Got it. Okay.
And that'll
give you
a nice description of our new platform, My Options.
There it is.
Encourage.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes,
I couldn't find it. I've been poking around while we've been talking, and I couldn't find it.
Well,
so thank you.
That's good feedback, because we just launched that website live on Friday, so we got to make sure we can get educators to that tab. So thanks for that, Larry.
Well, you're welcome. But we go through the same thing with our website. We assume because we know where it is, everybody else can find it. Okay,
absolutely.
And that is not the case. Okay, so this should be a lot more obvious, and that's what I always tell our folks who work our website: make it more obvious. They don't know what we're talking about here, but I love what you're doing here. It's just great. So, what happens when a school or a student or a family gets in touch with you, or what happens?
Mm-hmm.
What's the process?
Yeah,
the procedure.
There's a lot. So here's why I love this. When I joined My Options 3 years ago, I love the way that the work had already been created with the team that, you know, preceded me here. They really.
By the way, are you
this.
In Texas?
So,
before I forget, are you in Texas?
I'm in
now?
Houston. Yeah, I'm in Houston, Texas still. Yes.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So they had thought about, you know, this omni-channel approach of how do you reach a student? And, you know, certainly we are going direct to students to try to get them onboarded and to get them to participate and join My Options. But the team had really done a great job of engaging superintendents across the country, high school principals, department chairs, anyone that leads that the college and career readiness initiatives in the schools and the districts. Our team had really started to do kind of just have a blanket coverage of getting My Options to schools. And so that's happened, you know, historically over the past couple of decades. The opportunity here is now that we've got visibility in the schools and people know us, now we just got to get them to better understand how we can serve students in this day and age of college and career advising, right? This 21st century approach to counseling, which is the blended piece that, you know, we can talk a little bit more about. But we can reach students directly. They can come to our website. They can come to our they can download our mobile app. They can just jump on and start using My Options through, you know, going to myoptions.org and creating their individual account. The school does not need to be a school or a district that is a quote unquote My Options, you know, district,
right,
if you will.
Right.
And I like that because it leaves the ability. It's agile. It's nimble. And if a school wants to do a more, you know, concerted approach to onboarding their students, guess what? We're built to do that too. We send them the packages, the instruction sheets. We get the, you know, we have the point of contact in the school or the district, and then they begin to give the registration links out to the students. And then that way we can really tether this all together for them and say, now you've got, you know, X hundred students joining. We can provide you with some reports and some dashboards on the back end because we're connecting those students back to the school or to the teacher on our side of the house. So schools can sign up, districts can sign up, or individual students can just come to us and get going. So all three ways. We keep
and it's wonderful, Brian. I got to tell you, what's the thing? I don't know how exactly to ask this question, but what's the thing that you found that tends to hold kids back, that all of a sudden light goes on when they see what you can do? Is it because they're first generation kids, maybe whose parents haven't gone to college, therefore it seems that I'll never understand this. I just can't do it. My mom and dad didn't do it. Okay. Or is it dollars? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll never be able to afford this. There's no point in even applying. What is that thing that holds them back that you found? The key thing, if there is such a thing.
So I'll answer this in two ways, personal and professional. I'll answer the personal experience first. Certainly, as a kid coming up in Houston that was very poor, you pause and you say, wait a minute, can I afford this? How will I make this happen? You know, is this for me? Because no one else in my family, no one else in my community has done this. It just feels different, right? So you do pause and you ask yourself that question. So that's more of like a that cultural, you know, identification or confidence kind of question. Like, so that's huge, right, for us.
I would imagine it is.
So that plays into it, Larry. But I'm going to tell you, the biggest battles I fought professionally with my family is because at KIPP we had built a very high-performing college counseling program. My conversations with families that had students in the same zip codes where I lived and where I served was more along the lines of, you know, is college really worth it, right?
Ah,
that question around is it really worth it? Will it really make a difference? Can they just do a workforce cert program? Nothing wrong with that. Can they go to community college 3 miles away? Nothing wrong with that. I'm all for it. But I was seeing the majority of my students and my families – well, let me say it this way. My parents and my families were defaulting to that option early on in their academic students' lives, right? So 8th grade, 9th grade, they were already saying community college and workforce. And I'm like, you know what? That's great. We're gonna invert that. We're going to talk college first and what it means to be a college graduate and what that means for you and your family and your legacy. And we'll weave in the other conversations along the way as we get closer to graduation, if that's the right option for you at that point. So I had to do a lot of mindset conversations on, you know, how do you help your son or your daughter or your niece or nephew, if you're raising them, how do you help them think about stretching that beyond just what you know as a family member, because you have assets to have the conversation with your child. But let me give you the information and the data that's going to tell you, it's going to shock you a little bit in terms of what you can afford and what those outcomes can look like. And then I started to move the needle. You know, it's all SEL work, right? It's all that social emotional learning with your family, not just the student, but with the parents as well.
That's actually an interesting point, okay? And it's family cultural confidence that can make a difference, okay? You know, as opposed to the student. And, well, I want to talk two things here. First thing is colleges. Like you said, when you were at Exeter, and you were talking back in the late 80s before a lot of became aware of a lot of stuff, they gave you the scholarship and all that, but it is – an upscale New England prep school, been around for 300 years, whatever the case may be. All right. And you can feel like a fish out of water there. Okay. You really can. All right. And, you know, that's their fault. Okay. And that's, by the way, has changed. And I think we can all say that. But I hope it's changed anyway. From what I've seen, it's changed. But my question, okay, is the colleges that you're sending kids off to colleges, and yes, they can do the work. Yes, they can apply. Yes, they can get money and afford it. But what about the cultural aspects? Have the colleges that you're looking at changed things to make these kids feel more at home? Because that's a big part of the success, the fun, and the joy, and I'm removing the pandemic from all this, of college life. These days, it's nuttier than ever, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll say, you know, one of the things that I'm, again, very proud of my work prior to coming to My Options, which we're now bringing to My Options, is this idea and this concept of once a student begins to use My Options, we don't want that to just stop there. We want students to stay on the platform as they transition into college. So when we worked on this high-performing college counseling program at KIPP, here in Houston, we did two things. We built out the college counseling program, but in parallel, right alongside it, we were building out what we affectionately termed our persistence team. And so we started building in these persistence coaches that would run right alongside the college counselors in the high schools.
Cool.
From about,
I love this.
I would say October of 12th grade year, and they would pick up a caseload of students, and they would get to know them as they made their choices, built their wish list, their match list, applied to college, went through the stress of senior spring, and guess what? They had a relationship with those students and that family, and it was an easy baton passing to say, all right, now it's your turn to get this kid to and through. And with that process, we did what I think you're talking about, helping them to acclimate culturally, helping them to find resources on college campus, and push them to say, listen, you earned a spot at this school. You earned a seat at that table. Your voice matters, and you bring assets, and this is what you have to do to kind of elbow your way in and show people and represent from, you know, your community at Stanford, Harvard, MIT, wherever you go, or the University of Houston, if that's the case. We were doing that alongside that, Larry.
It's really so important. And the opposite side of that question, and it brings up what you were saying before, Brian, you know, a lot of the kids at the beginning of all this, of what you were doing about, you know, the schools, I'm just kind of stereotyping here, maybe we're not encouraging the students enough, okay, or not talking, the high schools I'm talking about, the parents, and making the parents feel secure in a choice like that, you know, so that it didn't lay on your shoulders to convince mom and dad, okay, that yes, your child can do this, and yes, you can afford this. Are the schools doing, the high schools I'm talking about, doing a much better job now of giving these kids the confidence they need? I think a lot of it has to do with resilience, social, emotional learning. But where are we standing on that right now?
Are you asking that question in terms of just, you know, generally speaking, high schools, traditional,
generally
charters,
speaking,
or are you
yeah.
just saying?
No,
general,
not
yeah.
charters. Just,
I mean,
I'll just use the word public schools. Yeah.
Yeah, here's what I would say.
Which is actually two words.
You know, my colleagues in the traditional high school settings are just super stretched, right? They are stretched beyond. For them to even consider the things that I'm talking about right now would be an incredible lift. I just want to say that because I know a lot of colleagues are out there listening, and I want them to know, like, I recognize and realize that. I know that the teams, our colleagues out there in the traditional schools are doing their best to weave in the social emotional learning, you know, all the grit, character work, everything. But quite frankly, they just need school leaders and school administrators to just step back and say, you know what, we recognize that students need a better journey to making a decision for post-secondary from middle school through high school, and that's
right.
got to change. The way we set students up to make these, you know, a college right now can cost you up to $250,000 a year. We're asking a student and a family to make a decision at the end of 12th grade, which
yeah.
is going to be more expensive than a home that they'll buy or own. This is one of the biggest investments you will make in your life outside
That's
of
right.
that house. And I'm like, wait a minute, how much research and time would you use, you know, Mr. Principal or Ms. Principal or Mr. or Ms. Superintendent, to go and find the next house you're going to live in? And you're asking a student just to have, you know, 5 minutes of a school counselor
yeah.
time across, you know, one academic
that
year.
That's right.
It's got to be experiential. It's got to be woven into the conversations. It's got to be woven into the classroom settings. And it can't just be a one-off school counselor or college advisor's responsibility. It's everybody's business at that high school or that district. Everybody's business. Coaches, advisors, teachers, principals. And some schools are figuring out how do you stitch that all together. And some schools are still trying to figure out how to keep people sane, you know, and that's the challenge.
And this year is nuttier than ever. Yeah, it's hard enough when
Correct.
Everything's normal. Okay, this year's
right.
nuttier than ever. And we have to wind down in a minute or so, but what's going on now with COVID, okay, and my options? Your company, my options.
I think my options is in a great position. We, you know, when I arrived here, we began to think about my options and how we're going to serve students both, you know, without COVID. We were thinking, you know, how do we serve students through the technology platforms that we offer and through the software and through the information we're delivering to students. And so now with our My Options Encourage Educator platform,
yeah.
which again releases this week and
yeah.
allows students
yeah.
to connect with all their mentors remotely. I mean, we had no idea this was going to happen, but we knew we were going to release this service this September. And so in the midst of all the COVID,
geez.
We've got this platform to connect students and educators and parents without having the student in the building. And so, you know, for anyone out there listening, listen, if you don't have a platform or a resource to stay connected with your students as it relates to college and career advising, you gotta give us a ring or look us up, and we can get you set up and help your kids get connected. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to help them with their planning process and save you some hours as well.
And we're talking about any kid who needs it, any under-resourced
student.
I mean, it's just that simple.
Any student.
MyOptions.org. And for educators, it's you'll see it on there. It's My Options Encourage. It's under let's go back and make sure people can find it till you do it. It's under resource. Is that right? Under resources? No, it's under who
it
we serve.
It should be under the how we
God.
Serve. You know,
who we serve. Right across
That's
the
right.
top. MyOptions.org. The icons, who we serve, do there, and it says education partners, educations and mentors, parents and families and students. Brian, it's a pleasure to know you, my friend.
Very good. Yeah, likewise. Thank you for hosting. It's good to hear your voice.
My
Let's
pleasure.
Do it again.
We will do it again. And when you get up, are you going to take your daughter up to Exeter? Are you doing that?
I'll be up there in two Thursdays. Yeah, October 1st. So I'll be up there to see the leaves starting to change.
They're already starting to change a little bit. I got bad news for you. They're already starting to change.
They'll be at height next in
2 weeks. They'll be at height. It should be beautiful down there. Okay, in Exeter, go have a lobster. Treat yourself to a New England lobster. Brian, thanks a million.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, buddy. You take care. We'll talk again soon. Okay.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye. Brian Contreras, everybody, who's the VP over at MyOptions.org. You figured it out. It's all part of ACT and my good friends over there. We have a whole section over there on the website at ace-ed.org for ACT, and we'll put some stuff up there for My Options so everybody can get it, but that's MyOptions.org. Brian, you're a good guy. You come a long way, baby, and I got to tell you, that's just incredible. All right, I wish your daughter the best of luck in what is a great community, Exeter, New Hampshire. My wife's down there today. We're going to archive the show over at education-talkradio.org, but I'll tell you, we are now hooked completely over at ace-ed.org, and all you have to do is just click through on that icon and link right over. All right, my name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. I really appreciate you listening. Have a great week.